Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Welcome in to Outkick the Show. I am your fearless leader, Clay Travis. I hope all of you are having fantastic Mondays wherever you may be across this great country or across this great world. Sometimes it amazes me to see how many different places people check in from. Let me know where you're rolling in. And in the meantime, let me tell you, go to mybookie.net. Go to mybookie.net. You can get hooked up right now. Go put in the code CLAY50, provided it's legal where you're located. CLAY50 at mybookie.net gets you a 50% sign-up bonus just in time for March Madness. Again, that is mybookie.net. Use the code CLAY50 at mybookie.net, and provided it is legal in your jurisdiction, you can be well on your way to getting set for March Madness. CLAY50. All right, lots of things to drive into. I appreciate it. Somebody said they're saying in from Dublin. How many people from foreign countries right now are going to watch? If you're watching in a foreign country, I'm curious. I just always like to see where people are actually going to be. A bunch of different things to roll through. We've got a ton of news. Somebody just said this is a stacked topics agenda today. You're right. I mean, there is an unbelievable amount of details out there. I want to start with Antonio Brown. Where is AB going to end up? I'll tell you where I think he should end up. Hint, hint. It's here where I live, in Nashville. Tennessee whipped Kentucky. I'll give you my four right now at this exact time in order. Number one overall seed. Adam Silver. A lot of times I feel like commissioners of pro sports leagues cashing big checks, not actually saying very much. I thought, give credit to Bill Simmons, give credit to the Sloan Sports Conference. I thought Adam Silver was more intelligent, more forward-thinking. I'm going to tell you exactly what he talked about in his analysis of the impact of social media on the way that his players feel, on the overall impact of social media on the NBA. Jim Delaney is stepping down as the commissioner of the Big Ten effective next year. It's a major news story for those of us who love college sports. And I watched the Michael Jackson documentary last night. And I got to be honest with you, it is one of the most overwhelmingly difficult documentary viewings I have ever seen. In fact, I'm going to start right there. I know it's number five on my list, but I'm going to start with the Michael Jackson documentary. I don't know how many of you, and also let me say this before we go any further, I loved Beverly Hills 90210. I was a huge fan of Beverly Hills 90210. If you haven't seen the news, Luke Perry died today. He was only 52 years old. That is a big shot to anybody who loved Dylan McKay, who loved everything about Beverly Hills 90210. That is utterly brutal. All right, but I'm curious. I don't know the answer to this, obviously, but how many of you watched the Michael Jackson documentary at all last night that aired, I think, from 8 to 10 Eastern on HBO? How many of you watched that documentary? I'm just curious because I do think as this spreads beyond HBO, and I know everybody doesn't have HBO, but it was incredibly difficult to watch. For those of us who watched it, and I only watched like an hour and 20 minutes of it, and then I was like, you know what, I can't watch this anymore. I thought it was going to be, I don't know what I expected, I thought it was going to be more of a documentary about Michael Jackson's life and not just these guys sitting and telling in excruciating detail all of their sexual relationship when they were 7 years old and when they were 10 years old with Michael Jackson. I mean, it was brutal to watch. It was incredibly detailed. And I am the king of saying allegations have to be treated as such. Michael Jackson is now dead. He was never convicted of a crime. I don't know how you can watch those guys give the talks that they did, supplemented by the family relationships that were also the interviews that took place there, and not believe that Michael Jackson is the equivalent of so many, unfortunately, of the Catholic priest that have sexually abused children. The evidence that they laid forth was pretty galling. It was difficult to stomach. It was insanely detailed. And I don't know how you can ever look at Michael Jackson the same again. I think everybody knew that Michael Jackson had some sort of psychological instability when it came to the way that he was raised. But these details, and also the parents leaving their kids alone with Michael Jackson, the fact that he was childlike, they said over and over again, he was childlike to throughout the course of the day and would play games with them and everything else. But in the evening, he turned into a sexual predator. And I'm not one who believes that great art has to be torn down because there was a felony involved in something or because in modern days we disagree with them. But it definitely gives me pause in even wanting to show my kids the Thriller video. Because for me, when I look at that Thriller video and I see my kids enjoying it, I'm seeing it in the eyes of the sexual predator that Michael Jackson appears to have been based on the allegations in this movie. And so, somebody just said a bit odd. I thought that Michael Jackson was just odd. I hadn't read or paid a lot of attention to the specificity of these allegations. And maybe that's on me. Maybe I'm a lot like you guys. When other allegations have been made, I just didn't pay that much attention to it. I was busy, and I'm going to block this person, all right? I'm going to block this person because if you're going to come into my show and you're immediately going to get outraged by something that I say in the comments, then you're going to be gone forever, all right? So that person is gone forever. I thought Michael Jackson was just odd. I thought he was a victim of a stunted childhood. The fact that what his family did and how quickly he became a member of the Jackson 5, I thought that that all factored in into just him being sort of an odd figure, as many artists are, right? As many great artists are. But these details are so overwhelming and alarming and strange and difficult to comprehend. It's really difficult for me to even enjoy, in some way, Michael Jackson's music going forward, just based on these allegations. Now, I know there are allegations. I think, in all honesty, as I watched this, I thought two things. First, I thought Michael Jackson is lucky that he's dead, because I think if he were still alive, I think if Michael Jackson were still alive, he'd end up going to prison. I think there's no doubt. I think there is zero doubt that Michael Jackson would end up going to prison. The second thing I thought was, I'm glad Michael Jackson is dead so that he can't victimize any more young boys. And that, to me, is an incredibly difficult situation to think about and have that moment of contemplation about what might be, what, one of the three or four most talented musicians of the last 50, 60 years of music in general. So I think he would go to jail. I think that he would be called to reckon for his past misdeeds, and I think it would happen. And look, I understand some people are not going to believe the accusers, and there's Michael Jackson fanboys out there that are like, oh, this person has changed their story and everything else. These are such detailed stories and allegations that we're not talking about like sometimes when you have a story change or something like, we're talking about tons of stories, right? This is not a one-time encounter, as often happens when we have he said, she said kind of stories. These are long-term relationships. These are people that spend a lot of time with Michael Jackson and says they were abused sexually time after time after time, all the others, every time. And so some people say, well, there are some kids who spent time with him that he didn't sexually abuse. And I always find that to be thoroughly not a good defense, right? For instance, Brett Kavanaugh, I thought one of the weakest moments of Brett Kavanaugh's defense was when he brought out women that had nothing but good things to say about him. you can be perfectly normal and good to many people. Most murderers don't kill the vast majority of the people that they are around, right? So having somebody testify that you are decent to them is fine, I guess, but it doesn't disprove that you were criminal in nature or behaved in an aberrant or abhorrent fashion with somebody else. So that's the way that I would analyze it. If you haven't seen the videos, they are out and they are difficult to watch. And again, I take everything within the context of allegation versus reality, but the allegations I find to be very credible in this story. And again, some people say, I get this all the time, well, how did you believe so-and-so? And how did you not believe so-and-so? And the answer is, I think you have to analyze the arguments and the allegations that are made. And to me, I find these guys to be very credible. And so I believe that I believe that these guys' stories sound very, very credible. And if you question them, I think Oprah Winfrey, of all people, is going to have a sit-down with these guys immediately after the show airs. And I'm sure they're going to go around on a lot of media and tell their stories. All right? So, a couple of other things. Antonio Brown. Let's talk about something more fun. Antonio Brown has gone out and he has gotten himself a golden mustache. This makes me a little bit nervous. All right? It looks like something out of Willy Wonka. I don't know what Antonio Brown is thinking, deciding to only make his mustache gold. It is an unbelievable look. All right? It looks like something out of Game of Thrones. It looks like something out of Willy Wonka. I don't know what in the world is going on with Antonio Brown's mustache right now. Okay? When I see Antonio Brown's mustache, every single fiber of my being is saying, no one can trade for this man and pay him millions of dollars. But when I watch his production, I think, gotta make it happen, all right? Adam Schefter came out and said there were three teams right now that are the most interested in Antonio Brown. This could obviously change, but this was his report that I think I woke up to on Saturday morning, if I'm not mistaken. He said the three teams were the Oakland Raiders, the Washington Redskins, and the Tennessee Titans. I think the Titans make the most sense. Let me explain why. Antonio Brown to the Raiders is a nonsensical move. Only John Gruden would trade a young Amari Cooper that is 7 years younger than Antonio Brown and then use a draft pick to take back a 30-plus-year-old guy. To me, Antonio Brown only makes sense if you think he is the next piece that can help you win a division and get into the playoffs. The Raiders are not close to winning the division. They are the fourth best team in the AFC West right now. They are much closer to a rebuild than they are a redo. Antonio Brown to the Raiders makes no sense. The Redskins are similarly probably going to go out and draft a new young quarterback. If you are going to draft a new young quarterback, then the last thing you want, I believe, is an outspoken wide receiver there to potentially destroy the young quarterback's development. The Redskins trading for Antonio Brown makes no sense to me at all. Of the three teams that Adam Schefter mentioned, and there could be other teams that are certainly of note that make sense, I think, beyond a doubt, the Titans make the most sense. Let me explain why. First of all, you have Marcus Mariota now in a fifth year, and you're paying him $20 million a year. He is being paid $20 million a year because the Titans have to decide this year, is he the long-range future of the franchise? Right now, you can make the argument, if you look at the Titans roster, Marcus Mariota has never had a good wide receiver. In fact, you can make the argument that the Titans have never had an elite game-breaking wide receiver in their 20-plus year history as the Tennessee Titans. The best wide receiver the Tennessee Titans have ever had is probably Derek Mason. You could make an argument before he got injured, that Kevin Dyson was a big-time wide receiver, but neither of those guys are really close to Hall of Fame level. And Derek Mason is probably the best receiver the Titans have had since they came to Nashville. Not a knock on Derek Mason, but he was, I think, a fourth-round pick. He's a small guy. Nobody changed their game plan based on Derek Mason. The most explosive wide receiver the Titans have ever had is probably Kenny Britt, because he was capable of going off for 200 yards and a half like he did against the Eagles, and then he hurt his knee, and then he couldn't stay out of trouble, and then he kind of fell apart. Corey Davis is in his second year, just finished his second year, going into his third year, top five pick. I'm not convinced yet that Corey Davis is going to be an all-pro caliber wide receiver. But if you paired him with Antonio Brown, I think every answer about Marcus Mariota you would know by year five. You would have Antonio Brown, who is maybe the best receiver, certainly top three or four wide receiver in the NFL. You'd have Corey Davis, who's a big physical guy that potentially is going to be an all-pro caliber wide receiver. You would have, coming back from an injury and hopefully going to be a lot better again, Delanie Walker. You would have two running backs, Derrick Henry, who established that he can be a workhorse back, plus Deion Lewis, who's the small, shifty back out of the backfield. You would have Taylor Lewan, who, if he's being paid accurately, is paid as if he's the best left tackle in the league. You could redo the interior of the offensive line with your second and third round picks. I think for the number 19 overall pick, if you think you are close to being a playoff team that can make a run in the playoffs, Antonio Brown to the Titans actually makes a lot of sense. On top of that, right now you can argue legitimately the Titans are the fourth best team in the AFC South. Assuming the Jags add Nick Foles, which we talked about last week, Andrew Luck coming back healthy, very good chance Le'Veon Bell is potentially going to end up a Colt. They're going to surround him with better weapons, got a great offensive line there. Deshaun Watson coming back off of the injury, coming back now for a third year. The Texans with the Demaryius Thomas injury, assuming Will Fuller comes back healthy, have got two really good wide receivers in Will Fuller and obviously DeAndre Hopkins. You can make a strong argument that the Titans are the fourth best team in their own division and that the AFC South is the best division in all of football, and that if you want to win now, you have to be aggressive, incredibly aggressive, in order to put together the talent that makes the most sense. And you have got a somewhat veteran quarterback in his fifth year dealing with Antonio Brown. You've got a relatively small media market in Nashville where everybody's not going to be poring over every little thing that Antonio Brown does. Unlike when you're playing with Pittsburgh, unlike when you're playing in a bigger kind of primary role in a big city. I think all of these make complete sense. All of this militates in favor of, in my opinion, Titans trading number 19 overall pick for Antonio Brown. Get three good years out of him. That's better than you would do getting an all-pro with most number 19 picks. Look at what happened last year with the Titans taking Rashawn Evans. He barely played. And maybe you can say that's a bad pick. But overall, the number 19 pick does not come in his first year and make a tremendous difference to a team's playoff chances. In the entire history of the Titans franchise in Nashville, the only guy I can think of who was a first-round pick that came in and made an immediate difference, the freak Javon Kearse. So they've had first-round picks for 20 years. The only guy I can remember coming in as a rookie and being basically unstoppable as a rookie, Javon Kearse, and leading a team. Now, Chris Johnson was really good and made a substantial difference as well. Those are probably the two best first-round picks in year one that I can remember. I think it's worth the risk. I think it makes sense to take that chance. All right. Couple of other things that I want to hit here. Adam Silver. Pro sports league commissioners get paid a ton of money to come in and make decisions. And by and large, I don't think they make much of a difference. If you haven't watched Adam Silver's interview with Bill Simmons at the Sloan Sports Conference, he was phenomenal. And he talked about a big issue that I think is something that we need to be talking about across the entire society, but certainly sports as well. And that is the dominating force and influence that social media has come to bear in our country. Whether it's Facebook, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Instagram, whether it's Snapchat, I think the overall impact and value for most people of social media is a net negative, right? It's been great for my career. I'm going to write on this. I love Twitter. Obviously, Periscope and Facebook, you guys are watching me on right now. It's a big part of what I do with my career. But I think I'm the exception. I think most people do not benefit like I have from social media. In fact, the study reflects that for Facebook, according to Stanford researchers, people who gave up Facebook for 4 weeks, and I think a lot of you may well give up social media for Lent, people who gave up social media for 4 weeks were much happier and they were less politically polarized than people who had not given up social media. And so I think this is playing itself out in our society as a whole. I have made this argument for a while. I don't think it's a coincidence that in 2016, we suddenly nominated the most hated Democrat to run for president alongside of the most hated Republican to ever run for president in the history of our countries. We used to make a decision when it came to politics off of who would the other people like, right? You picked a political candidate in the hope that they would win and the hope that people you knew who might not know who they were going to vote for might like them as well, right? Unfortunately, I think what has happened in the social media era is now people pick a candidate based on who will the other side hate the most. That's how Hillary Clinton happens. That's how Donald Trump happens. Not who will the moderate like. Not who will the middle of the road voter like here. You're picking based on who will anger the other side the most. And that's how you end up with a bipolar selection process that leads to all of this conflict, division, and discord. And I think it's directly tied to social media and the rise of social media. I don't think there's any doubt at all that this impacts things in a substantial way and that it's a net negative for our country. I bring that up because I hear all the time people say about the NBA, well, look at all of their social media influence. Look at the 35 million people who follow LeBron James or whatever it is on Instagram. And the NBA's influence on Twitter and social media and Instagram and Facebook and everything else is talked about. Okay? A great deal. What's amazing is Adam Silver in that discussion point says that most NBA players that he interacts with are not happy. And they are riddled with anxiety. And if you think about it, it makes sense. Why would Kevin Durant, who is probably now the greatest basketball player in the world, I think he's past LeBron James, why would he feel compelled to create burner social media accounts to argue with people who are anonymous on social media? It's because he is addicted to social media. And because instead of doing what players would have done for most of history, which is ignore talk radio, ignore the newspapers, watch something other than sports on television, now you can reach every athlete instantaneously right after they screw up in a game and deluge their mentions. And as a result, I think there is a great deal of anxiety because you're constantly suffused with everybody else's opinions. I remember I went out to dinner with Charles Barkley several years ago. And Charles Barkley, who is not on social media, said something I thought was really smart. He said, if you worry about the opinions of the people who don't like you, then the people who do like you won't like you anymore. Really profound. Charles Barkley's not on social media. Peyton Manning's not on social media. Michael Jordan's not on social media. Most, like Nick Saban's not on social media. Most of the people who are true badasses in their profession gain nothing by being on social media. They are who we talk about. Howard Stern doesn't sit around trying to make jokes on social media. They are who get talked about on social media. They spend very little time on social media themselves. I actually think Donald Trump would be better off, and by the way, he got Chick-fil-A for everybody who came to visit North Dakota State, the champions there from the FCS. Good props for Donald Trump on getting Chick-fil-A. I think Donald Trump's polling average would be 5 points higher if he tweeted a quarter of much. I think Trump derangement syndrome would not take effect if he sent out tweets much less. When you are the president, people talk about you all the time. I understand his argument of I'm setting the national agenda and I'm responding to fake news and I'm responding to people who are inaccurate out there. I think most people in America don't think the president should be typing out messages during the day. If you want to set the national agenda, go do a press conference availability. Okay? I think it works against him in a net ratio. Now, You may argue that's why his base has stuck by him. I think his base was going to stick by him no matter what, because we're living in a divided era. And if people think that you are the best that their party can do, they're going to defend you. Trump's, it's interesting, the media probably won't spend a lot of time talking about it, but I was reading in the Wall Street Journal today, Donald Trump's approval rating is 46% right now, according to the most recent Wall Street Journal NBC News poll. It's almost identical to the approval ratings of Bill Clinton and Barack Obama in their first term at almost the exact same time. In other words, for all of the anger that has rained down on Donald Trump, there's about 46% of the people that are out there that are fans of Donald Trump. And it's about the same number of people who liked Barack Obama halfway through his first term. It's about the same number of people who liked Bill Clinton at his midterm. It's why Donald Trump actually lost less in the midterms than most presidents do. George W. Bush is an exception because 9/11 crazily inflated his overall approval rating. But by and large, the first term 2 years in is a losing election almost always for the president in power. Happened with Bill Clinton at the Republican, the Contract with America, when Newt Gingrich rolled in and just dominated the Republican landslide in 1994. Happened with Barack Obama. The midterms typically go against the party in power. Obama was less successful than Clinton. Clinton was less successful than Obama. Trump was more successful than both of them. All right, I'm going to have to block somebody who's not saying anything very intelligent here. If I see you come in here and you say a lot of really unintelligent things, I block you. All right, my four, but my point here is, if the best in the world are having their overall mental health hurt by social media, what are we doing? I think about this a lot. I don't want my kids on social media. I am going to spend a lot of time thinking about how much time my kids spend on phones and on social media in general. All right, Jim Delaney is stepping down. Big news. I'm not sure who's going to get the job. Jim Delaney has been at the Big Ten forever. This is massive for what happens with the college football playoff going forward. And also, Tennessee whipped Kentucky. My top four in order, number one seeds in my mind right now. Number one, I'm going to go with Gonzaga. Number two, I'm going to go with UVA. Number three, Tennessee. And number four, Duke. I think the Zion issue right now and the uncertainty about whether or not he's going to be back, I think all four of those are the most deserving number one seeds. Kentucky would be my number five team. I'm not sold on Michigan or Michigan State. I don't think North Carolina has quite done enough to get themselves into this discussion yet. Now, if they sweep Duke, then I think they could knock Duke out of the number one and sweep up and take over the final number one seed. But that's the final game of the season in the ACC. North Carolina hosts Duke. They already beat Duke in the Zion blew up his shoe game. UVA is on the road tonight against Syracuse, but my four in order, the Zags, and I am a little bit suspect on the Zags, waiting to see how everybody else is going to finish out their season because they aren't going to play anybody good. And they lost to Tennessee head-to-head, but they did beat Duke head-to-head. Two spot, I'm going with UVA. Three spot, I'm going with Tennessee. Four spot, I am going with Duke, with Kentucky, and North Carolina right outside of that parameter, making an argument. I don't think that Michigan or Michigan State have an argument for a overall number one seed. So that is my four number one seeds. I appreciate all of you watching this show. I got to go get ready for my television show. Lock It In will be on in about 24 minutes on FS1, 4:30 Eastern, 3:30 Central, 2:30 Mountain, 1:30 Pacific. And I gave you guys a tease on this last week. Big week. I'm going to be on Fox News all day Friday. I'm spending all day on the Fox News lot up in New York City. Looking forward to that. Big week. I'm going up to New York at the end of the week. So much to get to here as we come down the stretch of the final week of the college basketball season. I love all of you. I appreciate all of you sitting and watching and hanging out with my show. I'll be live tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. Also be live, like I said, on television, and we'll be live on Fox Sports Radio tomorrow morning. Go to mybookie.net. Clay50 is the code for a 50% sign-up bonus. Kisses to all of you. My name is Clay Travis, and this has been Outkick the Show.